What if I could promise you your very own sea monster? And then we go on a road trip with the Falcon family. As they're driving through Georgia one night, they see a UFO flying behind them. After they are abducted, they realize this UFO has its own problems. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. Hope you guys are having a great day too. I'm going to be a little psychic here. I'm going to see into the past or the future, I don't know, that after yesterday's episode, you ate tacos. After yesterday's episode, you had tacos, or at least taco-flavored something. Maybe you just got a packet of taco seasoning and poured it into your mouth. Delicious episode yesterday. The first story. The second story is pretty gruesome. And speaking of delicious, let's give a shout out to one of our legacy Patreon supporters, Mikhail Kawee. Mikhail Kawee, everyone give a round of applause to him. He is on a plate. We imagine him as a giant cartoon taco with eyes. He's like, hey, what are you guys looking at? We're so hungry for tacos. But everyone shake your head. Quit imagining Mikhail as a taco, as a delicious, scrumptious taco. And Mikhail, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the Patreon, or if you guys aren't edible, that's fine. Or Army Hammer would disagree, but that's fine too. Just help spread the word about the show. Really, really helps out a lot. We have a merch store, and we have flyers you can print out in the show notes that will allow you to post them up all over town. Mikhail, I'm going to toss you the oars to the Dead Rabbit Robo. We are going to leave behind Dead Rabbit Command, and we are headed out to Sweden. Splash! Oars in the water. Splash! Oars in the water. I forgot how I do that sound effect, so that was kind of it, right? We're rowing all the way out to Sweden. Very long trip. We might eat you. We might eat you, Mikhail. I didn't bring any food. This story is actually, in a way, a request from Alexander, one of the Patreon supporters. So as we get to Sweden, he greets us there. He's like, hey guys, what's up? Where'd Mikhail go? We're like, burp. We all burp at the same time. We're getting off the Dead Rabbit Road, but Mikhail is reincarnated. He's back to us now. Alexander emailed me to recently let me know that in Örebro, Sweden, a lake beast was spotted. A giant creature was filmed in a lake. Now, it was actually filmed, and it wasn't like a blurry image way off. It was like super close up. It was actually so close up you couldn't tell how big it was, which should actually kind of be a red flag. But it's a video of this massive thing. I mean, it had to be like 6-7 feet long, swimming next to a boat. Now, it's not like some massive monster, like, kraken creature destroying boats and things like that, which would be cool. I mean, not if you're on the boat, not if you're filming it. Tell my wife I love her! As the tentacle crushes the phone, I'm like, yeah, now this is a story. It actually turned out, like, it is sizable, and they're not normally in this lake, but it was most likely a giant eel. And there are eels in Europe, the European conger eel. Gets up to 7 feet long. So that's what it was. It really wasn't a sea. I mean, I guess it was a sea beast if you were a trout. Or you were a little. You had like a little sewing needle for a sword and a little button for a shield. It's a pretty sizable beast. But for us, it's just maybe something delicious you chop up and put in your taco. But while I was researching this, thanks Alexander for sending that over, I started looking at Swedish sea monsters. Swedish sea monsters. I have a love-hate relationship with sea monsters. Mostly hate. I find them quite boring, because it's basically just a lump. At least Bigfoot, like, talks, and he has psychic powers, and sometimes he's on UFOs, sometimes he's wearing clothes. Sea monsters do none of those things. I've never seen one in jeans. Usually just a lump in the water. But I'll research them. I still research them from time to time, hoping I will find something. I did that cool episode about a year ago about the one in Nevada that was, like, flying around. It was a sea monster that could fly, and I think it breathed fire. It was killing sheep, and some Basque dude, like, punched it in the face. I'll see if I can find that episode, put it in the show notes. That's a sea monster. But anyway, so I'm kind of looking around at Swedish sea monsters. And I found another one that is just kind of a lump in the water. But this one has an interesting twist. Mikhail, fire up that Dead Rabbit Robo once again. We're going to Jampland in Sweden. Specifically, we're going to Lake Storsjön. And in Lake Storsjön, there is the Storsjögerit, which literally means Great Lake Monster. It probably doesn't literally mean that, but in a sense, it means that. It metaphorically means that. Great Lake Monster. We'll call her Storcy, because a lot of people do call her Storcy, like Nessie for the Loch Ness Monster. People have claimed to see it for a long time. Oh no, look at that bump in the water. That's Storcy. And then you just go about your day because you just saw a weird bump. But this one does have that twist I was talking about. There's an island in the middle of Lake Storsjön. It's called Frosen. And on the island is this big slab of rock with all these carvings in it. Now, they believe it was carved between 1030 AD and 1050 AD. And it tells the story about a bridge being built in the area and how the area was undergoing Christianization. It talks about, so this dude showed up and everything's changing and we're building this bridge and we're moving into a Christian era. It's kind of like a historical marker. You can tell that it's been broken in half as well. It's been repaired. The photo of it does show that it's repaired, but at some point, it was snapped in half. Now, the story it tells on the runestone is, like I said, it's basically a historical marker. But surrounding the runestone, illustrating the edges of the runestone, is the image of a giant sea monster. It literally takes up the entire edge of the stone. It encircles the message. In 1635, there was a manuscript printed. And this is the first time there's a written record of a lake monster in that lake. This is the first time we have a historical record of people saying there was a monster in this lake. And they tell this story, that runestone was actually forged by Ketel Runeski. He's basically a Prometheus figure, but instead of bringing down fire, he brought down runes. He brought down the written language from Odin. He was the one who actually made this stone and carved this in. And he carved a magical spell into the stone itself. And in 1635, they're telling the story, and they said, there is a monster in the lake, and the stone slab, the runestone, keeps it at bay. However, once the stone was broken, and chaos broke loose, giant monster is swimming around. I mean, this thing is massive. This thing is super huge. And people can't row across the lake. It's just like punching boats. It's evolving hands and punching them, ripping them in half. People couldn't figure out how to have any commerce in the area. This giant dude is showing up. He's loitering. He's loitering outside of the store. People don't want to go to the store because he looks like a hoodlum. He's smoking a little cigarette, a little leather jacket. They come to the conclusion that the only way to recapture the sea monster is to repair the stone. So that's what they do, and the creature is once again put into a slumbering state. It's an interesting story, and it was one that seems to have been lost to history. Like, you had this written back in 1635, but that wasn't an ongoing legend, because we know who carved the stone. There's actually, like, historical documents of who actually... In the stone itself, it says who carved it. It doesn't mention Rutelli, the rune master. It seems like historians have gone back and found this manuscript. So it's not like it was made up after the fact. It's not like someone in 2017 looked at the broken slab and told their little brother, hey, you know what happens if you break it? The sea monster pops up. There might have been a combination of it breaking and then really bad weather events, a really, really harsh winter. And that made the combination. And they're like, when should we repair it? They're like, repair it in spring, good sir. Or it could be that all of these sightings that they have nowadays of a sea monster are just tricks of the eye or eels. Because the real sea monster is slumbering. That rune was put there and it was etched with the snake. Or maybe the rune was put there with the original writing and the rune master comes down. He's basically Banksy. He goes, I'm going to spice this one up. But the runestone actually does prevent the true sea monster from coming out. Everything else that they see nowadays is a floating log or an eel or a bored eye. But if you went to where this runestone is at, they've moved it since, because I guess they've built a bridge in the area, but I believe it's still on the island. It's still currently there. It's somewhere around there. So you might want to grab a map before you try this next step. If you go there and you break it, you smash this 1,000-year-old monument, you might actually be able to call forth a lake monster. Now, I'm not advising you going around and breaking ancient monuments, But if breaking that ancient monument would prove that sea monsters are real, would you do it? I would. I would totally destroy a mammoth skull if it meant that a ghost mammoth would show up on CNN. He's all just walking through the control room, knocking over cameramen. There's probably a lot of things I would destroy that would make, like, Bigfoot appear or, like, a UFO to, like, just show up. And they're like, hey, dude, why'd you destroy that pyramid, man? We built that. I would probably kick over a slab of rock because they repaired it once. You can repair it back in 1635. I'm sure we can repair it nowadays. Mikhail, I'm going to toss you the keys to the Carbonacopter. We are leaving behind Sweden. We got a tow line. We got a cable wrapped around the runestone. Go, 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 go. As the Carbonacopter's taking off, it shears the runestone right in half. We see the waters bubble. We see Alexander running as the sea monster emerges. Hey, bye, Alexander. Thanks for supporting the show. We are going to head on out to Georgia in the United States, not the other place. I don't think we've ever covered a story in Georgia. I think it's too dangerous for cryptids and ghosts to hang out in the Georgia over in Eastern Europe. Ghosts are like, no way. As we're flying out there, I want to do a Dead Rabbit Recommends. I can't believe I haven't done this Dead Rabbit Recommends yet. And I think it's great because it plays into the 90 Days Challenge. And it's just a great, it's one of my favorite documentaries. I have two of my favorite documentaries I've watched multiple times. It's called Overnight. It's the story of the making of the movie Boondock Saints. And you're like, what? That's weird. That's a weird choice for one of your favorite documentaries. It might be one of my favorite films. I actually didn't even like Boondock Saints that much. I remember I watched it with Jenny Stoltz, and we were both bored. We heard all of this hype about Boondock Saints. We're watching it, and I was like, dude, are you into this? And she's like, mm-mm-mm. Actually, that makes it sound like she was. She's like, mm-mm-mm. Sean Patrick Flannery's yummy. No, we're watching. I was like, what's the hype? What's the hype? But Overnight is the story of the making of Boondock Saints. So I'm telling that story because even if you don't like Boondock Saints, you should watch this movie. Troy Duffy was a man who worked at a bar who gets a movie contract. He wrote a spec script called Boondock Saints. And he all of a sudden, overnight, goes from being a bartender to being the toast of Hollywood. And then a self-made destruction all the way down. It's a fascinating look at ego and talent and drive and luck and self-sabotage. And it's always that inverse side of success. It's fascinating. How often do you get to watch somebody rise and fall in real time, partially because of their own making? And partially because of external influences. Really, really, really good documentary. The people who were making the documentary were just two of his friends who said, hey, while you're making that movie, we'll make a movie about you making that movie. And also it's interesting behind the scenes about making a movie. And what's so funny, I remember watching it. I've seen it multiple times. There is a villain in the background of the movie that Troy Duffy is like, oh, this guy's such a jerk. He's sabotaging the project. He doesn't know who he's messing with. I'll take him down. I'll take him down. People are like, dude, I don't think he's that bad. And I remember watching the documentary and I kept rolling my eyes. I'm like, dude, he's not, dude, you're like totally making this guy out to be some sort of cartoon villain. Troy, you're losing control of your project and you're blaming this. He's not doing anything wrong. The villain's name is Harvey Weinstein. The whole movie, Troy Duffy knows Harvey Weinstein is a total piece of human garbage. But it's framed in such a way that you're like, what? Uncle Harvey? Which I think they might even call him that at some point in the movie. Harvey, he's helping you out, Troy. Fascinating movie. Because again, in hindsight, that guy is a piece of garbage. So it makes you look at the movie differently than when I watched it as well. When you're like, what? He was like, he's helped Quentin Tarantino out. He's helped all of these filmmakers out. It must be you, Troy. But part of it was him. It's a very fascinating look at the creative process, a self-destruction of ego and talent combining. You need both of them to succeed, but sometimes it's just such a volatile mixture. Check it out, Overnight. It's a great documentary. I'll put it in the show notes. I'm sure it's available for streaming all over the place. And it's one of those things when we're doing that 90 Days to a Better You, we also want to look at the dark side of success. And I watch movies like that to avoid those pitfalls, to keep my ego in check. So I do recommend that. Let's go ahead, Mikhail. We are leaving behind the Dead Rabbit Recommends video store, and we are headed out to Georgia. The year is 1968. Now, the Carbonicopter is in stealth mode. We're following a bunch of cars driving down this road in Georgia. I believe it's nighttime. And this is where we run into the first roadblock with this story. There's not a lot of specifics with this story. Now, I got this story from UFOinsight.com, which is a great website. I used to go to them all the time. This is the first time returning to them in a while. This is written by Marcus Loth. We've covered stories written by Marcus as well. They seem to be pretty good as far as authentic stories, or as far as we can tell authentic stories. The person themselves may be lying, but it doesn't seem like it's a bunch of creepypasta. This one's interesting because we don't have a lot of initial information. We don't know the exact location. We don't know the exact date. We have 1968. We don't even know if it's taking place at day or night, which these things make big differences or little differences, really, depending on the narrative. This one, we really only have the name of one person involved in the story, a young boy named Celestian Falcon. He's 4. Super suspicious, right? The name, I could not verify this person exists. Celestian apparently is a character in Greyhawk in some D&D thing. 4 years old is really young to be the only witness of a UFO story. I'm already second-guessing this. When I looked back over and saw the age, I was like, really? You're about to tell a story from a 4-year-old's point of view? Well, yes, because I do think it's an interesting story, but we're missing a bunch of information in the beginning. But we will go ahead and continue here. Celestian Falcon and his family are driving down this road, and there's other cars on the road. It's not like, whether it's day or night, there's a bunch of other cars on the road. And as they're driving down this road, in broad daylight or in broad nightlight, there is a UFO trailing the Falcon car. It's only about 200 yards away, so fairly close. There's another car behind the Falcon car, but Celestian gets the impression that it's their car that's being followed. Other cars are seeing this, and they are speeding away. Traffic coming towards the UFO, Celestian says he can actually see cars bust U-turns in the middle of the road and head off in other directions. People are seeing this UFO and scattering from the area. The only two cars that can't get away are the two cars that are being trailed by the UFO. Celestian's car and the car behind them. He sees the car behind them pull over to the side of the road. And at that point, Celestian's car also stops. And he sees his dad kind of fiddling with the steering wheel and trying to hit the gas. He's like, it won't work, honey, it won't work. And also, that's when Celestian realizes, I left a detail out, Celestian realizes his dad is in the military. His dad turns and he goes, honey, I'm in the military, I should totally know how to work a car. But it won't work. So Celestine's like, okay, that is another detail. My dad works for the military. This UFO is now floating over the car that's behind them. And Celestian's dad doesn't have any time for this. He's a military man. He actually pulls out a gun, tells his wife, wait here, honey, which I'm sure was totally her idea to begin with. He gets out of the car, and at that point, the UFO begins to move towards Celestian's car. By the dad getting out with a weapon, he actually drew attention to them. The dad jumps back in the car. He gets on his dirt bike and leaves the family. Bye, guys! He's trying to start the car, is what that sound effect is supposed to be. It won't start. Celestian looks out the back window, and he sees in the car behind them a young man jump out of the car, run to the passenger side, and get a young woman out. He then begins to try to throw her in the trunk to hide her from these aliens that have traversed intergalactic space and time. They apparently can't see through the trunk of a Ford Mustang. As he's trying to throw this woman into the trunk, Celestian sees 5 gray aliens standing around this young man. He reaches into the trunk and pulls out a crowbar and begins to swing it at one of the grays, but the grays pull out a shock stick. Ding! A whole bunch of sound effects in this one, and the man freezes in place. The aliens throw silver blankets over the man, and they drag the woman out of the trunk. And then the man and the woman float up into the UFO above them. Celestian says then he remembers a pinkish light enveloped the entire car. He's blinded by this bright light. As he's sitting in the light itself, he hears the car door open. And a hand reach out of the light and grab him. Next thing that Celestine says is, I appeared in a weird room, and I saw my mom and dad in the corner of this room, and my mom's like, my son, my son! And there's alien guards standing in front of the mom, pushing her back. Get back, get back. A reptilian shows up. Hi, Celestian. That's the only time I'll do that. But he makes the snake noise. He shows up, and he takes Celestian out of that room and begins to give him a tour of the UFO. He first takes him to, this should always be your first stop on every tour. If you ever go to a museum, you're like, may I see this room first? He takes Celestian into a room, and it's full of jars of human fetuses. And he's like, what? This is kind of weird. You know, me being abducted by a UFO, it's kind of weird too. At that point, he watches his mom and his dad brought into the fetus room. The fetus foyer, as you may say. And then his mom is strapped down to a table, and she's screaming at this point. She's totally flipping out. And an alien injects her with something, and she immediately just goes limp. And the reptilian grabs Celestine's arm and leads him out of the room. The next room seemed to be a control room, and there was like gray aliens and reptilians just kind of hitting buttons. Which is kind of a relief. You just saw your mom get attacked in a room full of human fetuses. And now she's basically on the bridge of a starship. Nothing spooky here, but then all of a sudden, he hears a woman screaming coming from another room. You'll learn very quickly in this story that although aliens have been able to traverse the galaxy or the known universe, they have really, really bad soundproofing in their UFOs. Because he's sitting in the control room, and in another room, he hears a woman screaming. It's not his mom screaming. It's a woman going, no! Screaming. And then he says, what was actually more chilling than that is a man screaming, which I've talked about this on the show before too. That's much scarier. When you hear a man let out a blood-curdling scream, it's terrifying. You hear women do it all the time in horror movies or when someone's like pinching them. Like I hear it all the time, like you're at parks or something. Apparently there's a big pinching bandit in town, but you know what I mean? Like girls screaming, it's super common. But when a man screams, it's so rare in the culture, or even it's blood-curdling. It's so scary if you've ever heard a man scream in real life. He hears this man screaming from the other room, which really terrifies Celestian. And he hears the man go, help us, we're being attacked by monsters. And then he hears what sounds like a fight break out in the room next to him. At this point, all the aliens at the control panels are also looking to see, like, what is going on in that room. They're just looking at the wall. And they hear, like, the sounds of a fist fight. At that point, a door opens up. And two aliens run out of the room and shut the door. And then they hit a button. UFO alarm goes off. And a bunch of aliens come from yet another room. And they all go into that room. And we can presume beat the crap out of this person who was resisting. Celestine's like, what is going on? So apparently this guy did get a couple good punches in on these aliens. They had to go get backup. But the room goes quiet and he's sitting in the control room. And then all of a sudden, another person enters the control room. Celestine turns around and this guy is a Spaniard. This is a Spanish dude in a spacesuit. He walks on board. He's like, how's everything going? You guys good? Okay, what's this little kid doing here? What's this little four-year-old kid doing? I'll talk about that later. This Spanish guy shows up in a spacesuit with a triangular-shaped hat. You're like, Jason, is this just some kid's dream? Is this some four-year-old dream? Hold on. So the spaceman, the Spanish spaceman, who has like a triangle-shaped hat and a spacesuit on with like patches. Not like Raggedy Ann. He's like, I can't afford a real spacesuit. You know, like military patches. He shows up and he's like, how is the mission progressing? Celestian's hearing all this stuff telepathically. The guy getting beat up, the human beating up the aliens, he heard that with his ears. But all the language stuff he's hearing telepathically. The Spanish dude shows up and he's like, How's the mission progressing? And he begins to hear something that a device was broken in half and fell out of a UFO. This is a really, really poorly maintained UFO. Soundproofing doesn't work. Stuff falls off. Apparently a device fell out of the UFO, broke in half, and fell into a Georgia swamp. And that's why they're here. They've already retrieved half of it. Now they have to retrieve the other half. They're just kidnapping. They're just abducting these people. You know, why not? Because we're already here, right? How was the sweep come with the swamp? The Spaniard says. Say that three times fast. And the gray aliens are like, we're still looking for it, sir. The gray aliens, we're still looking for it, sir. Look faster. We have to find that device before the Joes, before G.I. Joe catches up to us, apparently. So he is then led, once he's gotten the plot, once he got the exposition, Celestine is led out of the control room. And he's walking down this corridor, and the two aliens are talking to each other, and they're talking telepathically, but he can hear them. And the aliens are like, dude, did you hear what happened in cell block A? Oh yeah, that was nuts. But that's not all. And the other alien's like, what are you talking about? He's like, apparently, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. Shh, just between you and me and everyone else who has a sentient brain who can pick up telepathic thoughts. The humans are uprising. The humans are fighting back. All the human captives we have on this ship, more than the protagonists have been introduced to already, are fighting back. They've learned our weakness. Getting punched in the face. They've learned the galactic weakness is just forming a fist and punching us. And the other alien's like, oh my god, our plans of conquering are done. We can't fight back against the fist. At this point, Celestine's being led down this hallway. He's looking through doorways. He looks down one doorway and he actually sees the guy who had been in the car behind them, hooked up to all these tubes and devices, laying on a table motionless. Then all of a sudden he hears another message in his head from the aliens. Oh no, things have gotten really bad. No, no, they're using both fists now? No, 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 worse, worse. We're actually picking up that someone is on their way. And at that point, Celestine says an image appeared on a wall of two U.S. fighter jets. And the impression he got was these jets were headed towards this UFO. That impression was verified when the aliens talking telepathically said, those aircraft have been scrambled. They're on their way. They'll be here in 12 minutes. And if we're found here, they're going to blow us up. And the ship's already falling apart. The ship really doesn't have a chance in battle against these guys. At that point, Celestine says aliens are just running down the hallway. Alarms are going off. Everyone's freaking out. They don't know what to do. A bunch of them have big bruises, big black eyes. This mission is not going well. They wanted to find half of a box. They ended up getting boxed. And now a bunch of jets are coming. Celestine says then, as all this is going on, he looks into another room and he sees a bunch of gray aliens sitting there with black hoods on. Totally calm. They're not running around. They're not freaking out. They haven't been punched yet. But he said the impression that he got was these were the oldest of the old. These aliens were far, far more advanced than the other grays on the ship. He also got a sense of arrogance, absolute arrogance from them. That they seem not only above humanity, but above everything. They're just sitting in a room. At that point, Celestine is taken. They're like, get away from the old people room. That's our rest home. Get away from there. They take him. They strap him down to a metal table. And as they're like prepping all this stuff, they got like a needle ready. He still is hearing them talk telepathically. And they go, you doing it, Barry? You got it? And Barry's like, yes, 3, 2, 1. And then everyone stops panicking. The alarm goes off. And the gray alien standing there with the hypodermic needle, he's getting ready to inject Celestine. And he hears that the U.S. fighter jets were successfully evaded. All the UFO did was go 40 minutes back in time before they were discovered. He is injected, and he blacks out. Celestine wakes up, and he's still strapped. He thought he was going to wake up in bed. He wakes up, he's strapped to this metal table still. And the alien, he feels like all the procedures that they were going to do on him have been done. He feels a little bit at ease. The aliens are still keeping him there. And then appearing in the room is a man. So not a Spanish man. It's just a dude, another human. And the aliens kind of are startled by this man. And Celestine says that this man, for lack of a better term, was angelic. Maybe a faint glow, maybe he had a cartoon halo and a little harp and wings. Celestine had the idea that this man was angelic. And this human is standing there and he goes, you got to put him back. you, alien, reptilian dudes. You got to put him back on Earth. Him and his whole family. That boy is a child of God. And the reptilian looks at this dude and goes, I don't know who you are or where you came from. I'm actually curious about both those things. But yeah, we're going to put him back. We're almost done here. And at that point, the angelic figure gets mad and he says, you need to put him back now or you will all be destroyed. And then he disappears. Now, Celestian's laying there on the table and he's thinking, did I just imagine that? Like, everything else was real. The fetus foyer, the fighting aliens, all that stuff is real. But that seemed out of place even for a UFO. An angel showed up? He thinks it might just be his imagination. And then one of the reptilians looks at one of the other scientists in the room and goes, did you see that? What was that? The reptilian then turns to Celestian and goes, what are you? The reptilian then says, I don't know what you are or what that thing was. But we are not going to find out. He then telepathically sends orders that they have yet another problem on the UFO. Some dude magically appeared in the operating room and said they were all going to be killed if he didn't let the family go. Stuff's falling off this UFO. Soundproofing sucks. Human uprising. Now you have interdimensional invaders. Next thing Celestian knows, he's sitting in his car. And his mom and dad are in the front seat. And he says, there's a moment where they're all kind of groggy. It's almost like they're waking up. And he goes, I remember sitting in the back seat and everyone was just kind of drowsy. And he goes, a few seconds passed. Then all of a sudden, his mom started screaming and the dad turned on the car, hit the gas, and sped away from the scene. He turns around, he sees the UFO shoot off into the night sky. He says that his parents would never confirm this story happened. They never wanted to talk about it. However, throughout the rest of his time growing up, he would see a cat-like alien, not like a little cat alien, but like a humanoid cat, walking through his house sometimes, walking through the walls. He felt like there was always alien visitors at home as well, but his parents would never confirm these stories. It's an interesting story, and obviously, there's a lot of issues with it. The main one being the main person who experienced it all was 4 years old. He wasn't telling the story when he was four. He wasn't like, and then I got a lollipop. Like, he was an adult or a young man telling the story. This happened when he was four. But even if you were telling the story at like 18, 14 years is a long time. Details are going to change. Maybe it wasn't a room full of fetuses. Maybe it was only three. But I mean, like, it wouldn't matter. But you know what I mean? Like, details could change. Things could get exaggerated. First off, it could totally be made up. I could find no existence of this person outside of this article. UFO Insight's a great resource, so I don't think they made it up, but I don't know where he got the story from. I did find someone going by the name Celestian Falcon on Above Top Secret, which is a conspiracy board, a conspiracy forum. They had two posts. One was talking about anti-gravity, and the other one was talking about the New World Order and aliens, the draconian menace. So I would think that would fit, but I was reading through the post and they don't ever mention this story, which would be the first thing you would mention. If you're going to post on a conspiracy board, you'd be like, hey, let me introduce myself. I'm this, and you would tell this story that I just told you. I don't think it's the same person. It could be. It's such a bizarre name, it could be the same person. Or it could be someone who read this story and took that name. Celestian Falcon is a very evocative name. It's so evocative it sounds fake. That's the thing. It sounds like a fake name. It's Celestian is not a real word, but it reminds you of heavenly and falcons fly. So the story may be totally made up. And we, you know, should address that when we're discussing this type of stuff. But if it's not fake, it reveals two things. One, there's this idea, and this come across a lot in UFO lore, that if you pray, if you mention Jesus Christ's name, gray aliens leave you alone. I think I've covered it once or twice, but that's pretty well known, that if you say Jesus' name, gray aliens show up, they're like, no, not him, and they disappear. I've never really known how to take that. I've never really known how to work that into the lore. There's a conspiracy theory that gray aliens are actually demons. So that would make sense. But I mean, that would be a really short intergalactic war, right? All the UFOs show up. We got all of our fighter jets. Then we just get a megaphone. And we go, Jesus Christ. And all the UFOs fly away. They're like, no. I mean, it wouldn't make for an exciting sci-fi movie. I've never really been able to work that out. So you have that. You have the idea of an angel showing up, being able to penetrate alien defenses, order the child, let go, and they do let him go. It doesn't mention if the other people in the car behind them were let go or what happened to the human uprising or anything like that. But I think the angel showing up is an interesting story. It's very convenient that an angel shows up for a boy named Celestian. But, you know, again, that it could just be a coincidence. But the other takeaway from this story is something that I think is very notable. And that is aliens are absolutely incompetent. And that makes sense. That totally makes sense. Anyone who's ever worked for any organization knows that stuff is run super, super incompetently. You could have a state-of-the-art warship manned by dummies. You might have a couple smart people on there, and then a bunch of people just doing their job, and then lazy, lazy bums who are making everything fall apart. A battleship can come straight off of the assembly line, and within a week, stuff is falling off of it through shoddy workmanship, really bad maintenance, and incompetence. And that would make sense that that would translate across the stars, right? They're building these crafts that can break the laws of physics, but with the radiator leaks. That makes sense. This UFO was in a state of chaos from the second he got on board, and I find that fascinating. Because it shows that incompetence and mismanagement is a trait that every intelligent species shares. And I do believe that's true. I think that's a very, very fascinating part of the story. Alien incompetence. They may be able to break the laws of the universe. They may be able to abduct humans. They may be able to evade our defenses. They may be able to go back in time. But humanity should have hope if we ever do go to war with the aliens. That they are just as dumb as we are. I say let them abduct us. And the second that beam wraps around our body, we just start swinging. Woo! Woo! That's the noise you make, right? When you punch people. Woo! Woo! Just start swinging. Now, you might hit another couple abductees, but it's okay. We're humans. We can take a punch. And then we start walking through the UFO and we just start punching. Woo! Woo! And the aliens are confused by the strange noises and the feeling of ape knuckles pushing into their alien brains. Woo! Woo! Everyone fan out. Just start punching, kicking. Oh, that's a new thing. They didn't expect the kick. Knocking over display panels. Oh, I'm supposed to display stuff on there. We can easily beat these aliens up. And then we take control of that UFO. We, as one people, fly that UFO back to Earth. A captured alien spacecraft. We will be greeted by throngs of fellow humans. We will be heroes of the resistance against our alien captors. That is, if the UFO, is able to make the journey back home, it may break up in space around Alpha Centauri, but as our bodies freeze in the cold vacuum of space, I'm going to look at you, you're going to look at me, and I'm going to give you a big thumbs up. My knuckles may be bloody from punching a reptilian multiple times in the face. But with that thumbs up for eternity as I fall through space, I get to say, Earth first, now, and forever. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. Twitter is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day. I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great one, guys.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.